Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. And sitting across from me,
way over here, is my cousin Tino.
And silent Gary LeMaster is with us again today, who will be unsilent Gary LeMaster.
The crew is morning.
The regular crew.
We're going to be talking about private prisons today. There's some major news, and the major news is that the Obama administration received a report saying that private prisons were more violent than public prison, and that they cost more, and they were not well run. And so they've started a 5-year program of phasing out federal private prisons. Now, this sounds like really big news, and if you're the private prison companies, it's been very bad news, because one of the major ones is Correction Corporation of America. Their stock dropped almost 40%. GEO, another one, the GEO group, dropped 35%. I don't have the statistics on the wonderfully named Management and Training Corporation.
Stock drop must be terrible for some Arizona politicians.
We have both of those companies in Arizona.
We do. I think, Gary, do you know Mike? I think it's Correction Corporation is the biggest one in Arizona.
Yes.
Okay. So this ruling by the Obama administration, this decision by the Obama administration to phase out private prisons in the facilities run by the Bureau of Prisons.
Right.
It doesn't affect immigration holding systems. It doesn't affect the vast majority of prisoners. There are 90,000 private state prisoners, and I think there's, what, Gary, 22,000 federal prisoners in private facilities.
Yes.
So logically, it's a much narrower reform, but at this point, folks, we'll take anything we can get,
There's 22,000 federal prisoners in 13 prisons, private prisons, and there's 25,000 prisoners in 46 immigration detention centers, which are not affected. So the private prisons are still going to, corporations are still going to do great with immigration detainees.
And the vast majority of prisoners are in state prison. We should sort of pat ourselves on the back. I got a letter because we started talking about this back in 2011.
We did. We talked about mass incarceration. Mass incarceration is in our promo, in the promo I did. About what we talk about on Democratic Perspective. So we've done several shows.
So if you're interested in that, folks, you can go on the website. We did a really good interview with, I think, Diane Post, who was very eloquent.
Great. Yeah.
And we did an interview.
I'll meet this name or organization. Arizona Advocacy Network.
She also works with American Friends Service Committee.
Friends Service.
And they've done a massive report. A lot of our reporting, folks, has been done on private prisons in Arizona. Right?
And Chad Campbell was the other guy.
Chad Campbell was here, who, when he was the minority leader of the state house.
And he was
very eloquent. And Chad's thing is he wasn't against privatization per se. I mean, if it's a concession stand, well, privatize it. There's no reason for a government agency to run a concession stand necessarily. But if it's a prison, that's a very different situation.
Yeah, exactly. And then listening to that rare common sense, what a great legislator. I mean, it was just, it doesn't make sense. You know, if you're doing food service, fine. Privatize that. That's not a government thing. Then maybe somebody else would be better at it, and somebody else could do it cheaper. But when it comes to the prison and schools, but we're talking about prisons today, it doesn't. To turn that over to a for-profit organization.
Does that bother you in itself, Mike, that you can make a profit? And also, Gary, does that bother you that you can make a profit imprisoning people? Shouldn't that Well, what do you think?
What should bother everybody? I mean, that you're paid by the widget, of course, and so the more prisoners you have, which it doesn't take a genius, once again, a statistician to figure out. We have 5% of the population in the United States. We have 25% of the prison population. We have one in four prisoners who are in prison in the world are in prison in the United States. Now, one of the reasons for that is because there's a profit motive here. There's a fill rate. Arizona, they got correction corporations and jail got the legislature to agree to 100%. They had to promise that they would pay at the 100% rate. In other states, it goes from 90 to 100%.
That means
guaranteed income, folks. This is what we're all looking for.
If you don't have the prisoners, then you're paying them for like holding empty cells, right, Gary?
That's right. Having the beds.
I wouldn't object to private prisons if they did the job as well or better and cost less, but that's not the case. And what I think is a stunning development is that I think it was last year or the year before the Arizona legislature passed a law that banned the state corrections department from doing comparison studies.
That's right.
Between private prisons and public prisons.
Now that should send a signal to voters. I mean,
I agree completely.
Oh man. It's like, is this like studying guns? We ban the CDC from studying guns. Ban the legislature. We don't want information, folks. We don't want to know what's really going
that
on.
That is like a smoking gun for corruption going on when you ban being able to study or compare.
That's corruption with a capital C.
It was because the last study done showed that private prisons in Arizona cost more per prisoner than public prisons. And what makes that even more surprising or alarming is that the public prisons take all of the maximum security prisoners. They take all of the ones with chronic health problems. And the private prisons take the minimum to medium security prisoners who have no real health issues. They still have problems with deaths from health.
And this should bother everyone just on cost, okay? And Obama could justify it just on cost. Forget about treatment. However, for some of us, and this is why the world needs liberals, most of these people are in for nonviolent crimes. I mean, we're talking drug crimes, marijuana crimes, incredible increase when private prisons came in, minor drug offenses got imprisoned. Statistic went up.
One of the reasons, Mike, in the background to cutting the private prisons right is that. The federal prison population has been dropping for just what you're referring to, the mandatory sentence, the really extreme drug sentences are less. The prison there's less crime in the U.S. I know folks don't want to believe that, but there's less crime. There's less prisoners. The number of prisoners has been going down. That motivates some changes, right?
Because we had so many.
For many years, as the crime was going down, the prison population was going up. It's only recently that they've started to reduce
Why is that, Gary? What's your take on why the crime rate goes down and the prison population goes up?
Profit motive of prisons.
When you look at the private prison corporations, they generated last year $3 billion in combined profits between two private prison corporations.
That's a big business.
So they're heavily involved in influencing government through lobbying.
They have a massive lobbying effort.
There was an article on a
massive lobbying effort. They're doling out the money big time.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention SB 1070, the paper's police legislation that was passed in Arizona and other states, and that one of the reasons for that legislation was to create six. They had plans for six new private prisons in Arizona to hold the undocumented immigrants, and the bill was written by an attorney for Corrections Corporation of America, and the whole thing was kind of planned to generate profits for the private prisons by, you know, arresting, rounding up and arresting a whole lot of people.
Right. They thought there was going to be serious mass incarceration, that those 12 million at the time.
So is this a big deal? I mean, there's articles by the people who don't like this who say it's no big deal. And here's the ACLU's National Prison Project director. For the last 35 years, the use of private prisons in the country has crept ever upward, and it now. And this is a startling reversal to the trend of 35 years of increasing federal prison. So when I take that as a pretty good argument, Mike.
Well, certainly.
That this is important, even though it affects a small percentage of the prisoners, if you look at it, you know, utterly objectively.
Absolutely correct. The state legislators that believe we're getting ripped off, like I said, just on the basis of money, private prisons is a bad idea. Obama's move to phase out private prisons at the federal level within the next 5 years gives those state legislators at least some impetus, a basis, and a factual one, where they have done comparisons, where they didn't outlaw comparisons to close their state private prisons, or at least to make some moves to, and like I say, if you can't close them, improve them. The other thing I want to kind of mention early on here is it's like money is good enough reason to close private prisons, but it's also treatment. Prisoners in private prisons weigh 10 to 60 pounds less than prisoners in government-run prisons. Now, the other thing we got to get over here is
we're combating obesity in prison.
I'm an advocate for
let them go a little hungry. You know,
well, that's it.
And then I'll realize, you know, I don't know why.
But don't forget, most of these people are in for nonviolent crimes. I mean, you hang out in the Verde Valley, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting at least three, you know, con people that have been in prison. A lot of people have done time in prison in the United States.
I remember voter registration, and people would sort of shake their heads. And say,
that's what they thought, and in some cases they were correct. But so that's the other big thing, that when you have a for-profit prison, where are you going to save them? Well, you're going to save it on food. You're going to save it on medical care. You're going to save it on guards. Some of the biggest scandals in Arizona and nationwide in the last 10 years have been in private prisons, people escaping.
So we're talking a lot about statistics and about the big picture, but there's an excellent article in Mother Jones where one of the hikers who was held in prison for 2 years in Iran went and got a job in a Louisiana private prison, and he's written a long article reporting on it. It's an excellent piece of writing. Some people have said, well, you know, reporters should never pretend to not be what they are, but he signed up with his real name. If the prison was not desperate for anybody to go in there, they could have just looked him up on the internet and found out he had been in jailed by the Iranians, and that he wrote for Mother Jones. But they hired him, and so it's a very, I think, very personal report on what it's like to be a prison guard in one of these private prisons. Mother Jones, I don't remember the issue right off, but it's a devastating article about the violence in the private prisons and the corruption.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, what did he say? Apparently, a prison guard, in Yavapai County for a long time, you know, prison guards started $10,000 more than teachers.
Yeah.
Now, I don't believe that's the case anymore. But
there's a whole list of, I think, about 10 states that spend more money on prisons than they do on higher education. Interestingly enough, Arizona isn't among them, but New York is. Part of that is because the New York higher education system, you have a huge city system, which is not counted in the, when you're calculating state spending on a higher education. But there's a whole list of the states. They're spending more money on prisons than they are on higher education. The rate of increase in Texas, I think, is above 600% in terms of the spending on private prisons.
Well, I like it by the once again, statistics, lies, damn lies, and statistics. But look up the per pupil rate in Arizona. And depending on what school board member you talk to, don't forget about talking to the legislature. They will lie to you. But, $5,000 maybe per student, and it costs $15,000 a year to keep somebody in prison in Arizona.
And that's just...
So right there, give the schools $15,000 per student, and we would have really good school. And more importantly, we would have great
but
teachers.
But we never do that, Mike. We never spend money up front to prevent a long-term problem, do we? We never seem to do that. We don't spend the money to attack poverty in order to cut down the amount of crime. We don't preschooling and training and vocational training. We never invest in preventive measures. We always the solution for 35 years has been just put them in jail and leave them there as long as possible.
Well, that's one of, I think, the biggest issues with prisons in general, whether they're private or public. Because the public became vengeful, in my view, about prisoners, they didn't want to just punish them by putting them in prison. They wanted to take away virtually all of their access to education and retraining and rehabilitation. The whole concept of rehabilitation basically disappeared in U.S. prisons.
Now, and there were problems with making it work, statistically. So, but I think Gary's making a very important point here that years ago, decades ago, the United States had once a program like you see in European countries, but it just stopped doing rehabilitation, Gary, right?
Well, we end up... Punishing them further by just warehousing them, many of them in solitary confinement, and not considering the fact that these people are going to be returned to the streets at some point, many of them, and so we do nothing to rehabilitate them, and as a result, with the cutting costs in prisons, we've ended up increasing the recidivism rate dramatically. And compared to Europe and especially Norway, our rate of recidivism is ridiculous.
Well, and in a for-profit system, that's good.
Yes, yes.
I mean, so
that contributes to the $3 billion annually for two companies.
They really make $3 billion in profits, Gary, annually?
Yes.
The sooner they
wow.
come back, the better. Which is not good for society, but it is good for private prisons. So there is no, once again, no motive to have any of these programs like you're talking about in European countries, or it used to be in this country that the idea. So I never quite got it. Taking away, people get locked up for committing a crime. You deny them freedom. You deny them access to society. So the job is done. We're safe. They're being punished. But then started, and you alluded to it, this whole movement, and I think it was whipped up by these guys that wanted to use prisoners for slave labor.
Which well, there were three strikes and you're out.
Which
there were mandatory sentencing for drug crimes, not in Arizona, but in New York.
So
mandatory
the Joe Arpaios of the world decided that wasn't enough. That keeping them away from the rest of us, taking away their freedom. Wasn't enough, so we started piling on with green bologna and pink underwear.
Well, they've even taken away the green bologna now.
And humiliations. And because people didn't like the idea of people going to spend whatever time that they had to serve for their crime in a country club.
But they wanted them hurt. They wanted them hurt. They wanted them humiliated and made as uncomfortable in these uncooled, unheated tents as possible. They wanted them to suffer beyond keeping society safe for a while and teaching them that you don't do some of these things or you end up, if we can't trust you to go out and not hurt people, then you've got to go inside where you can't do it as
well. Once again, mostly nonviolent crimes.
As long as we brought up Arpaio and Tent City, we would be remiss in not pointing out that Tent City, per prisoner, is the most expensive prison in Arizona.
There you go.
And what's really criminal about that facility is that most of the people in it are people that have not even been convicted yet. they're awaiting trial. And you talk about green baloney. To further punish them, Arpaio even took away that because it increases his profits. So now there's two meals a day, both with a hard roll and gruel. And in the morning meal has juice. The afternoon meal has milk. That's what those people get. And they have not yet been convicted.
And there's, to me, not having enough to eat is a special form of punishment. I mean, this is that by itself. I could be in a country club, but you're not giving me enough to eat. I'm being punished.
Well, even if he's giving them enough to eat, he's making it as unpleasant to eat as possible, right?
It's,
and
it's,
he's not giving them. There's no coffee.
The
there's no
thing.
Tea. There's no sugar. There's no anything that's.
The tents are located next to a landfill. So they can enjoy the aroma of that.
Wow.
There are no bathrooms other than porta potties, so those swelter in the 100 plus degree temperatures. There's no air conditioning and no heat.
And nobody's done anything about that. There's been no suit. I guess the ACLU sued and lost trying to reform Arpaio's system of imprisonment.
And from what I understand, he and his wife make lots of money off of the food service for it.
Well, the military-industrial complex had their eye on this source of labor, and I think if for 35 years, this was one of the huge motivations, was to be able to get things made by prisoners for cents on the dollar that they would have to pay for otherwise.
It's also been kind of a feedback system. These draconian laws, which were supposed to keep everybody safe, mandatory sentencing, three strikes and you're out in California, mandatory sentencing in New York and many other states. What they did was they increased the prison population radically. And so states invested in private prisons because suddenly they had more and more prisoners to deal with, even as and toward the end of this, the last decade or so, even though the crime rate's been going down. It certainly went down radically when I lived in New York. I don't know. Gary, what's your take on the future of private prisons? Is this going to, and Mike, is this really going to damage their business? I mean, it's, as you say, $3 billion a year. This is, their stock is tanked, but it'll go back
up.
Well,
I think one of the things that I want to mention is that they're suing states. Private prisons are suing states. So until some of those suits shake out, we might not know how much damage it's going to do, but we have. Didn't we already?
Why are they suing states? What's the story on that, Mike?
For labor, they want access to more prisoners for free labor.
The other thing is that as far as the future is concerned, these prison companies have contracts with the states. So nothing's going to happen, you know, quickly. They also have requirements in those contracts that the state give them a minimum number of occupants. So they have an occupancy rate that's usually somewhere 85% and more, in some cases much more. So in other words, if the state doesn't have enough prisoners in the privately run facilities, then the state pays for the prisoners, whether they're there or not. The other thing I'd like to bring up is that we haven't even, you know, the Obama administration's announcement doesn't include the private holding facilities for ICE, you know, the
That's
Immigration
right.
and Custom Enforcement, which spends about $2 billion a year on immigrant detention. Bernie Sanders and
to his credit, Bernie Sanders campaigned against private prisons on this issue.
And Arizona's Raul Grijalva have both called for expanding the ban on private prisons to include for-profit immigration detention. And of those, you know, what they've found is that a lot of these facilities are like the federal prisons, the privately run federal prisons are inhumane in their treatment. One of the worst is the one in Eloy. that has a terrible track record for, I believe it's 14 deaths since 2003. And they've had lots of problems with mothers going on food strikes because of the treatment of them and their children in the prisons.
All right. Let me read a little quote from the USA Today. You know, most Americans, we believe that slavery was abolished, with the 13th Amendment.
Some sort of amendment? Constitution?
The United States? So according to USA Today, ratified at the end of the Civil War, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery with one critical exception. Slavery and involuntary servitude actually remain lawful, quote, as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. In other words, according to the so-called punishment clause in the 13th Amendment, if you get pulled over for the wrong controlled substance in your trunk, there's nothing in the 13th Amendment to ensure you can't be considered a slave of the state. And that's how they legally use. And so that's one of the reasons private companies are suing states, because they're not holding up their end. They're not getting enough slave labor. Uniforms for restaurants, Applebee's, McDonald's, I told you the canteens, lots of things for the military are made, because these are all private companies, private corporations that are doing these things, are made in prisons. And it's just, the reason for slavery was clear 150 years ago. It's because it made their owners lots of money.
You guys mentioned earlier about contracts, federal contracts for asylum-seeking women and children. One facility in Texas, in Dilley, Texas, one facility cost $1 billion to hold women and children who come into the country without any papers and sort of illegal. Well, just women and children, not men or anybody else, apparently.
And it should be pointed out that those people are really refugees. They're called illegal immigrants, but they're fleeing, the Central American countries that, if they stay, they'll die. There's so much violence. The children are being forced into to gangs. So they're really, it's not fair to call them illegal immigrants. They're not here looking for jobs. They came here to save their lives. That's to me a big deal.
One of the things that you kind of want to mention is that on the, I suppose, non-liberal side, even though I'm not a big fan of presenting both sides, that's not our job here. But there is a certain feeling among a lot of people that hard work is rehabilitative, and that there's nothing wrong with a prisoner working we talked about rehabilitation.
They still have road gangs in the South.
Exactly. So if there is some value morally in having people work hard in a rehabilitative way, then that justifies a lot. But for me, and maybe that's true, and we can have that discussion, but when a company's making profit off of somebody else's hard work.
If they're sitting around doing nothing, isn't it better that they do something rather than just sit around all day watching TV and getting into fights and arguments?
Yes, I have a problem with them making profit. Because if they pay them, $35 an hour or whatever the guy outside is making, maybe so, if they're working as hard. But they're not. In other words, the only reason is for increased profit of companies.
They used to make license plates So they were doing a service for the state.
Right.
They used to be trained in woodworking and other trades.
So they had something and when they got out.
So they had something.
Making McDonald's uniforms, I'm not sure, is a saleable
skill. Exactly.
It's gotten harder to train. Let's admit it, that a lot of the jobs that they were being trained for no longer exist.
That's
true. With computerization and artificial intelligence and the vast changes in the American economy. You could still train them as in carpentry, but there's a lot of things that they did that don't work anymore.
They're using them for call centers now.
Yeah,
well, that's
true.
That's right.
And fundraising.
Aren't they using some of them now? Maybe this is not true, guy, but I was reading an article that said they were using them. There was some worry about this. People were worried about it because they were using them as call center for bank credit cards.
Yeah. I think they cut that out. I think they found it that way.
You think they cut it
out? Take a bunch of criminals that don't have, you know, and say, okay, here's a bunch of credit card numbers. Have a good time.
I think another thing we should bring up is the issue of mental health and how prisons are being used as mental health facilities. The Republican legislature and governor of Iowa are about to close the last remaining mental health facility in the state. And so, you know, it's true also in Arizona and most other states that many of the mentally ill are not, you know, sent to a mental health facility. They're sent to prison.
And
when they act up as mentally ill people are want to do, they are then put in solitary confinement, and often put in solitary confinement as a life sentence.
Right, and that makes them completely. They're just now studying. I shouldn't say just now. They've known for a long time the incredibly debilitating and devastating effects of solitary confinement on a healthy mind, let alone somebody that has.
It's illegal
sort of
in a lot of countries. Solitary confinement used just as punishment.
It should be here. Should be here. And the reason they do it is because it saves money. It's easier to lock them up 23 hours a day, and then because you don't have to have the guards and the programs to take care of them.
I guess one of the scandals was one of the big private prisons, and it was in the South. I don't remember which state right off. I was reading the article the other day, and the complaint from the government was that there was no psychiatrist or psychologist. They had all these inmates, and they had no therapy for them. And the company said, well, that's not true. We have a guy coming in once a week. So you have this large population of disturbed people. Yeah. And you have, we have a psych. He comes in every week for an afternoon. We have a psychologist. He comes in once a week. There's no other. Yeah. There were no other psychological facilities, no group for people to work on stuff. And that was the reply to criticism. It's like saying, you're not paying those people a fair wage, and you say, well, we're giving them at least $4 an hour or something like that. It's not a great comeback, folks. It's to have that minimal sort of psychological help.
It brings up another issue. Oklahoma Correction Department did a study on private prisons and found that the starting salary for a prison guard was $12 and something an hour. Mm. You know, these are one of the ways that private prisons are trying to compete with the public, run prisons,
right,
is by reducing the salaries for the guards and cutting the number of guards, which is what makes the prisons more dangerous and what makes them
Remember 2010, Gary, the Kingman, the private prison in Kingman, a woman came along, who's a friend of one of the, close friend of one of the prisoners, and she takes a pair of wire cutters, throws them over the fence, three murderers, I think it was, that cut through the fence, run off, kill a couple or something, and, I mean, it's minimal security. If you can roll the wire cutters over the fence and they can cut the fence and they can run for it, that's not protecting the public, is it?
That prison was run by GEO Corporation or GEO Group, And our governor just recently gave them a $2.5 million state subsidy for additional beds.
We documented, right, guys, that connection of Jan Brewer with the private prison industry,
CCR, yeah.
The number of people who were in her cabinet, very important high officials that had worked for or as lobbyists or as managers for private system company. Is that still true? Do you know, Gary, Mike, about Ducey? Is he connected with the private prison industry through economic reasons, or
I have no idea, but he seems committed to private prisons.
Probably ideological then,
and continuing the growth of them in Arizona, despite the fact that he just gave them this amount of money to build a new facility or to expand a facility, despite the fact that we already had an excess of beds. In capacity.
Well, that's we mentioned Diane Post earlier in the show, and she was very good at those.
The American Friends Service Committee report. It was criticized, but they didn't put a dent in it when their devastating release of information about the Arizona particular private prison system. Devastating report. People argued against it, but they didn't really lay a hand on it. I mean, the facts were sort of there. The Arizona Republic has done some good reporting on private prisons, too. It doesn't seem to have any effect, but they've done it.
There's a recent column by Linda Valdez saying that the administration's, taking away private prisons or moving away from prison doesn't go far enough. And then Lori Roberts has another article as well. Valdez is entitled "Private Prisons Are Immoral, a Publicly Funded Mistake." I think that kind of sums it up.
That does kind of sum it up. But the mental health thing, to be, I guess, prisons are, at least are in 2016 are better because of than they used to be with.
Because of some reporting,
with medication and whatnot. Yeah, and I think it's one of the things about a free press, holding the prisons, both the state and private, feet to the fire when it comes to mental health. At least getting people. Medication in every county in the United States, the largest mental health facility, and it certainly is true in Yavapai County, and certainly is true in I think the L.A. County Jail is the largest mental health facility that they have. I want to mention that mental health facilities are not great places either, by the way, so closing them, at least in some cases, is not necessarily a bad thing.
Let me ask you guys both a really difficult question. You don't have to go to it if you don't want to, because it's a big question, which is, how should we run the prison systems, Mike? What would a decent American prison system look like? Because there are dangerous people that have to be kept away from the public. There are people doing all kinds of illegal things. You can argue about some of the things should be legal or not, as libertarians are against any kind of drug enforcement. But what would a good system look like?
Well, I think that's the
Gary,
problem.
Gary, Mike?
We have models. We have plenty of models, and we can identify those people that need to be separated in a more serious way. It just seems that we're not doing it. We're treating so many of our prisoners the same, violent and nonviolent. The models that we have I don't want to say they're expensive, but they cost more than some of the things we're doing. In some cases, they don't cost more. They just would take some training or a care and concern. So I answer to your question, we have the models that work better and that help, that do provide training, that do provide activities, and all the other things that keep prisons from being the violent, brutal places they tend to be. It seems like everything becomes Lord of the Flies when you lock people up together They go to this lowest kind of behavior.
I think you have to look at this whole issue holistically. If you want to reduce prison population and reduce crime, improve the economic conditions of the impoverished, especially improve the education levels of the poor, that, you know, alone has been proven to reduce crime, and then improve the conditions in prisons so that you reduce recidivism. You know, and truly, you know, make a commitment to rehabilitate the prisoners that you can. You're not going to do it with everyone. There are people that are dangerous, too dangerous to ever be let out, but you can take the ones that are in for nonviolent crimes and help them, you know, readjust to society in a positive way. That's been proven to work in countries around the world. All we have to do is follow our own model, which we created and then abandoned,
right.
And Europe and Scandinavia continue to follow it with great success. They have the lowest recidivism rates in the world.
So let's go back then. 35 years ago, we started abandoning the American model that became a model for the way prisoners are treated. In those days, and even before, 50, 60 years ago, the United States was very far ahead of European countries in their treatment of prisoners. And what happened? Was it all about vengeance and evil and fear?
Yeah, well, it was the welfare.
And racism.
You know, one guy gets, you know, one prisoner that was maybe not punished enough as far commits a crime that gets headlines. And they say, well, he was coddled in prison. And so these anecdotal things, forget about the hundreds or thousands that were successfully rehabilitated or treated or were caught at a young age. I mean, the juvenile prisons, you know, the juvenile detention centers are critical. And we have I want to say that before we run out of time, we have lots of people working very hard in juvenile detention centers and in prisons that try to educate, that try to provide programs on almost no money, and bless those people for the work that they're doing in the prisons in Arizona and across the country. There's just not enough of it.
I remember when this whole discussion first went down back in the, I believe it was the late 70s, early 80s, and there were the media created this image of prisoners whiling away their time in
the
prison by lifting weights to become, you know, more, you know, stronger, you know, therefore better criminals.
You're right,
by
right.
Spending their time getting a free education and spending their time digging through law books. So that was what happened.
We have some announcements, Gary. And thanks for listening to the show, folks. If you go on our website and you do a search for private prisons, you'll see our really, I think, really, really good interview, not because of us, but because Diane Post was so good about private prisons and the Chad Campbell's talk about what should be privatized and not. Gary.
We have to mention a couple of upcoming events for Democrats of the Red Rocks. Thursday, September 15th, there's a breakfast. The subject of the discussion will be regulation and taxation of marijuana.
We're going to try to get their speaker on here and find out more about it.
That's going to be
These marijuana bills very confusing at best.
That's going to be on the ballot this year.
Yeah.
Also, very important, on Sunday, September 18th, there's going to be a picnic in the park. It's going to be a picnic for all. Anyone's welcome. It's going to be at Posse Ground Park.
By Democrats of the Red Rock. And Gary and Mike usually are cooking hamburgers and veggie burgers and hot dogs.
The cost is $10 for individuals, $15 for families.
Lots of candidates will be there, by the way. If you want to meet some
major candidates,
Democratic candidates in an informal setting.
Auction. A couple of different kinds of auctions, wonderful pies and cakes. It's a traditional kind of almost like a Labor Day
picnic. If you'd like to help the local Democratic Party, please come and buy something. Don't forget, you can get this and all our shows on vvid.org. Democratic Perspective has a wonderful website, and we have all of our podcasts on vvid.org. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in, folks. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.